Hello, friends. Welcome to Pod Maverick After Dark. Though the graphic I now have says Pod Maverick Happy Hour. You know what? I'm not going to change it. It's the middle of the offseason. I'm Kirk Henderson, joined as always by Josh Bowe. It has been a minute since we talked. Josh, how are you?
Doing good. Yeah, it's been ages. Do we still know how to do this? Do we need to brush off the vocal cords a little bit? Might be a little bumpy, but I think we could still do it.
Well, I mean, but before we get started, I just got to throw it up to the guys who do this every day. Yeah. The DLS guys, the Locked On Mavs guys that are putting out anywhere from 4 to 6 episodes a week when there's just fucking nothing to talk about. Respect.
Yeah, absolutely.
We just can't. I tried to do it. You guys will remember probably the 2022 season, I think, when the Mavs made the Western Conference Finals. I was putting stuff out all the time. Can't do that anymore. Life's changed. And that's really why we haven't been recording. And quite frankly, we also haven't recorded because what has happened over the last several weeks did not inspire me to be like, Josh, we need to record.
You didn't want to do an emergency pod on Zach Richechet?
We're going to get to that because I think that's a fun topic to talk about, but it was also like not so, it just sort of goes to show you the kind of move to where it didn't move, where it didn't inspire. That's not to say it was bad. It's just a thing. So we're going to talk about it. I decided I want to work backwards, largely because I think we should get my sort of general pissiness out of the way first, and then we can move on to kind of greener pastures. The Mavericks have had, by all accounts, a very good offseason. And as I have said many a times, compared to where the Mavericks were before the 2025 lottery, so we're talking May 2025, roughly 15 months ago. Is that right? No, sorry, 2024. I can't even do math anymore. What's wrong?
Basically saying post-Luka trade, pre-Cooper flag lottery, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
We're such a better place, and I'm delighted, big picture. Very happy with a lot of the offseason. And then yesterday we got news from the Mavericks PR account, which goes to show you that none of the local Mavericks reporters are tapped in.
I kind of love that the team announced that before reporters got wind of it.
And you know, I'm sure some of our reporter friends, and again, we do know some of these people, are kind of annoyed with their inability to make headway into the organization. I, for one, am okay with it. Because what it is telling me is that to date, the organization has a lid on their information flow. And that gives me an element of peace of mind, where if I hear something about the Dallas Mavericks, particularly from, let's just say, like a hoops hype guy or something, that means it's not coming from the Mavericks. Full fucking stop. It is agent-based, not Maverick-based. That's important to me as we head into the season, and just gives me, you know, a little bit of peace of mind to say, you know what, I'm not going to worry about what I'm hearing. I'm not going to worry about the nonsense I'm reading, because there really is a slop market out there. You know, you see these overseas Facebook sites that tell you Cooper Flagg is now 6'11", and it's like, who the fuck made that up? And then of course it just becomes this big, you know, it goes to Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and it's all nonsense. Basically, if you don't hear from the Mavs right now, you got to question it. And so they gave Najee Marshall a 3-year, $52.2 million extension. That extension kicks in at the start of the 2027-28 season, so next year, meaning the Mavericks now have Najee Marshall under contract for the next 4 seasons, should they choose to keep him that entire time. Some of the details on the contract, it is apparently the kind of contract and the size of contract where there is no 6-month moratorium on whether or not they could trade him. They could trade him right now, which is quite interesting. And you know, my initial reaction, actually, I want to punt to you, because my initial reaction was actually, I had more to say about this than just about anything all summer. What was your thoughts on the deal?
My initial reaction is that if you kind of take it out of context and you just look at player production and then the money, mm-hmm. it's fine. It's a fine contract for a solid, you know, role player in the NBA. Mm-hmm. Nothing more, nothing less. The thing that gets really weird and interesting about it is then putting that contract extension and that player back into the context of where the Mavericks are as a team right now. Because Najee is, what is he, 29?
He turns 29 in January.
Okay, so he'll be 29 before the season's over. Still very productive. Has had the two most productive seasons of his career the last two seasons. Coincidentally, those have also been two pretty awful Maverick seasons, but that's not necessarily related to him. So the thing is like it's good for the it's good money for the production. I just don't. It feels like there's just more to come, and it's hard to evaluate a deal when it feels like it's a prelude to something else. Is it in 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, the trade deadline in February? Because right now the roster is kind of funny enough, like Nico Ball on steroids. It's all bigs. It's all forwards. You know, Kyrie Irving is really the only credible starting guard or guard period on the roster. The other guards are unproven guys, you know, like Sergio was an encouraging pick, but he's a late first round rookie. Like, other than him, they don't have a guard on the roster that you could credibly say can run offense. You know, Marcus Sasser is a guard, but he is more of an off ball
shooter.
Yeah. And then everyone else is either a rookie, a second round pick, or a two way guy. So like if and when Kyrie misses games this season, if the roster is how it is right now and they don't make any further changes before the season starts, it's gonna look just as ugly at times as it did last season, because they don't have enough guard play. I mean, it's literally Kyrie and that's about it. Unless they're really hoping on Sergio, but again, that's
which I think they are.
Which is fine. I'm okay with them throwing him in the deep end. I just hope fans have the right, you know, expectations for where the season is. That's why I keep thinking that they're going to trade for a not necessarily a starting guard, but at least maybe a starting caliber guard before training camp. I mean, the roster is just flooded with bigs and forwards, and not all these guys are going to be able to play. Also, if their goal is to eventually trade some of these vets like Daniel Gafford, Klay Thompson, PJ Washington, even Anaji, it's going to be hard to maintain your trade value when those guys are kind of not in the most ideal situation with the lack of guard play and the lack of floor spacing that this team is going to have as currently constructed. So we'll see. So like, again, my overall take is that I think it's a fair value for the production that Najee has given the last two seasons. I just don't see the vision of where the team's going to be with Najee in a couple of years. And again, it's one of those things where it's like everyone's response is, well, they're going to make trades. And it's like, okay, but we don't know when or if that's going to happen. So when we try to evaluate it right now, it kind of leaves us in a little bit of a limbo, like almost like a purgatory. But I'm a Najee guy. Like, I thought I was pounding the door down for him in the 2024 summer when the Mavericks did eventually acquire him. And I remember people being really skeptical of them basically choosing Najee over bringing back Derrick Jones Jr. And Najee's done everything I've thought he could do. I think his numbers are kind of ridiculous when you look at it. Like, he was 61% on two-pointers his first season in Dallas. He was 59% on two-pointers last season. He was 54% on floater range shots last season, 71% in the restricted area. Like, he is an outrageous slasher and paint finisher. The problem is the Mavericks have a lot of guys that like to operate in the paint on the roster right now, and they kind of just need more shooting to open things up. So we'll see, but it's an interesting extension. I'll just say that. And my gut is that their goal is that they're just going to try to acquire, you know, maintain as many solid players on solid contracts, and then eventually try to cash in where they can. Cause like, I'm looking at the roster and I'm going on and on. I'll go back to you after I make the point.
It's good.
None of the contracts are outrageous. Like, if you look at the money and the years, there's not a deal on there where you're like, ooh, that's a cap killer. So that's, and you need contracts to make trades. So that's another part of it. Like, if they want to make a big trade for maybe a distressed star or something like that, you need to make the money match, especially with the second apron world that we live in. It's even harder to make those deals if you don't have the contracts to kind of grease the wheels. So that part makes sense. But again, as it stands, if I'm evaluating this roster right now, I don't, you know, if they want to be a playoff team, I don't see it, because you're basically asking Kyrie to play a healthy like 60 games. Because I think anything less, the team's going to be in deep water if they don't shore up their guard spot. But we'll see.
So my take that I have kind of bent from a little bit, but not too much, is that this was the first bit of bad business I feel like the Mavericks have done this summer. If you were to tell me that the Dallas Mavericks extended Najee Marshall because Cooper Flagg likes Najee Marshall, that is good enough for me. Other than that, what has Najee Marshall brought to the Dallas Mavericks that is a tangible thing that you could say, this is what he is going to be doing for the team next year, and it is going to help lead them to wins? He was signed as a defensive guy to be in the role of Derrick Jones Jr. Because of the Luka trade, that got abandoned pretty quickly. He has not played very good defense as a member of the Dallas Mavericks. To be fair, no one has played pretty good defense as a member of the Dallas Mavericks going back until the NBA Finals. So maybe I'm holding that against him. Two, we have understood by now that the Mavericks rebuffed trade offers for him and instead opted to extend him. I don't know what the trade offers were composed of. There's not a lot of available first rounders. That's very important to understand. But I am of the opinion, given the various logjam at the forward position, Najee's one guy too many. They have to move someone, and they didn't. So I don't really like this extension. Life will go on, but I've had multiple people tell me that now Najee is more tradable. I'm sorry. The non-shooting soon, eventually will be 30, former undrafted free agent, is not, he's not in his prime. Like, the athletic prime ends theoretically around 30. Now, he didn't play much during his earlier seasons, like with the Pelicans. He kind of worked his way towards what he became, and I respect that. But I just don't find the Najee argument particularly compelling. It's not awful, but I'm kind of like, what is this? Like, he's a bench player, and the things he was good at, like, didn't lead the Mavericks to winning anything. I don't know. Maybe I'm just completely off base here. I'm willing to be like, all right, Najee's a great signing.
He's one of the few players on the team that can generate offense on his own. Which is useful. But again, the problem is the most optimal way for him to do that. Like, you know, if he's on the floor with a Gafford or Lively and Merez and Cooper, like, just teams are going to pack the paint against Dallas in a way that they did at times last season. Mm-hmm. And it's just going to be harder for him to exploit his biggest strength. If everyone he shares the floor with is, you know, even, it, you know, a 30% three-point, you know, 30% three-point.
Yeah, and so maybe that's hard.
The thing that they're going to have, you know, if he can produce somewhat of a similar season that he's done the last two seasons, I think that's a valuable player at the deadline for a team that thinks that they're one more bench scoring piece over the hump, something like that. Now, I don't know how much that's going to actually get you.
Right.
Because they had offer, you know, if you want to believe reporting, they had offers last trade deadline. So the thing to me is not, is he going to have value on the market? I think he will. It's going to be, is it going to be enough for them to pull the trigger? And at what point do you just be like, okay, it's not exactly what we want for him, but we just need to recoup something and get the roster in a place that makes more sense positionally. Cause I feel like that's kind of where they're headed with some of these guys. Like, they're just going to have to start trading guys eventually, whether they like it or not.
Yeah. I mean, someone spiked Kirk's drink with Haterade. This is not a hating statement. A guy that shoots 30% from the three-point line is not an NBA playoff player. Like, he cannot play. You cannot, or he can play and your team's losing. So, I just want folks to understand this. Like, if you're happy for him, which a lot of people were, I'm not taking away the you know,
he's a very likable player,
you know. Fantastic locker room guy. So it's like, if you're pitching me solely on the things that aren't countable, sure, fine. You know, even the statement from Masai Ujiri was something to the effect of like, this guy's work ethic and everything that he brings to the table is like important to us. I'm just not that into it. And I'm not like, I had one guy, he's a comedian online with like 50,000 followers, told me that Najee will improve his 3-point shot like Jason Kidd did. Yeah, and no. I want to like, yeah. No. No. Okay. again, it's not the end of the world. Of course, it's just, I want some finality, and like this roster, you know, I don't want to say they're going to be bad because I don't know if I believe that, but you have to have some kind of like, this roster just doesn't make sense. Like I'm going through, I asked Jack, one of our Jack Nowicki, who's been on the show many times, to write sort of a roster breakdown. And like, this is what he did by position. Point guards, Cooper Flagg, Najee Marshall, Sergio De La Rea. Shooting guard, Kyrie Irving, Max Christie, Marcus Sasser. I agree with that. The problem is, of those six guys, half of them, that's not what their position is. Like, I fundamentally disagree that Cooper Flagg should be bearing an offensive load like he's Luka Doncic. It's not the best. He is a generational defensive player. And by asking him to soak up 30% of usage, he's not going to be that. It is too hard to play both sides of the ball with that kind of usage. We know that. It's just a fact. And so it's like, that's where I get sort of like, eh. Now, I need to, if you're telling me to pump my brakes, like Kirk, next year doesn't matter. Factually correct. But I think the Mavericks are going to be trying to win. And for a guy like me that watches 75 to 82 games of the Mavericks per year, I want watchable basketball. And my fear, since Masai was brought on board, this was kind of my initial take, though I kind of warmed up on it because I think having a professional in the room matters. Not the way that Masai Ujiri has built basketball teams is 3 yards in a cloud of dust basketball. It just fucking sucks. It does. The Raptors suck. Do you know why the Raptors won the title? Kawhi fucking Leonard, not the rest of the team. Kawhi. Like, do we have a Kawhi? Maybe we do. Maybe it's Cooper. And maybe, preferably, I am absolutely wrong. I just want to, you know, Kyrie's going to help a lot with this. I think that's probably the better way to go about this, is that my annoyance at this, you know, bench guy deal is actually more about the team than it is the player. So,
right. Like if before they did this extension, if they traded, I'm just going to pull something out of my butt. This is not real.
Sure.
Like if they traded PJ Washington and stuff for Scoot Henderson from Portland or Shaedon Sharpe, like just another guard of that caliber, like, and then they do a Najee extension, you're like, doesn't that just, you're like, oh, okay, well, they got their guard, you know, they're going to lock in Najee. You know, that would make a little bit more sense. Like if they had made a deal this summer before locking in Najee for a guard that could conceive of being starting caliber, at least of that talent level, whoever, pick a name. Like I said, Scoot Henderson, Shaedon Sharpe, any guard of that level, you know, even like a Colin Sexton, you know, just someone like that, even if that's more of like a caretaker role, then you're like, okay, you know, I get it. But right now the roster looks eerily similar to last season's, and it's also eerily similar in terms of like the positional logjam. And I think emotionally, this doesn't really affect me too much, but I can understand from other fans' point of view, maybe yours, Kirk, but like this is still shockingly similar to the roster that Nico built in terms of
positional.
In terms of like the top seven, the new front office has done a great job filling in the gaps in terms of being a bit more versatile in the type of players that they're going after to fill out like the 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th spots, like trading for Santi Aldama, you know, trading up for Sergio, the second round picks with Toby and the Russian kid, trading for Zach Richichet. Those all don't feel like moves Nico would have made. But at the end of the day, of all of the offseason moves they've made, in terms of new player acquisitions, currently none of them, if the roster's healthy, I see being top seven in the rotation. Maybe right. Merez, maybe Sergio, depending on, you know, just how desperate they are for ball handling. Maybe Marcus Sasser, but like their starting five is probably going to be some form of Kyrie, Max Christie, Cooper, PJ, and then pick one of the centers. And then one of the other centers is going to be, you know, off the bench, Clay, if they don't get, you know, if they don't move Clay, and then Najee. So there's your top seven. And those are all guys that have been on the roster the last 2 years, mostly. So I understand that there's probably like some, like, you know, trepidation, because it's like new front office. They've obviously, they're putting in the work, you know, like I said, the moves they've made on the margins, I've generally thought are solid enough deals, but yeah, the core roster is still kind of the mess that it was, you know, at the time Nico traded Luka. So, I think until the roster turns over a bit, it's going to be hard to shake that kind of feeling.
And there wasn't much, and I got to be clear.
They only have so much ammo. Yeah.
They've done a lot with limited ammunition. So I'm not unhappy. That one move is just sort of like, I just wanted some, and also I really want finality with PJ and Daniel Gafford. I just want that out of if we're keeping Najee, then PJ's got to go. And I don't think he's gonna.
The roster is in a weird spot where it is still the roster that was built to take Luka to the finals, and also the new regime trying to come in and make it imprint. So I feel like it's kind of this weird, like, tug of war between two identities. Cause, like, you know, there's still all the most of the role players that were here before Luka was traded, that was built, that were brought here specifically to get the most out of Luka and for Luka to get the most out of him. You know, those guys are still all here, you know, Lively, PJ, Gafford, you know, even Kyrie, Clay, who they brought in specifically after that 2024 finals loss, when they realized they needed more consistent shooting. Like, that's like five or six guys that they acquired with Luka leading the team in mind.
Yeah.
And now it's a different guy. It's Cooper. So you could see it. You can see it on the edges, like Santi Aldama and Rishi Shea, like, okay, more shooting from the wing, you know, more floor spacing. So you see bits and pieces of it. But
there's no reason to be negative, like, big picture. You still gotta be like thinking the Mavericks are trending up. So that sounds ridiculous coming from me after I just bitched about the contract. But I just wanted to express my take on it. All right. Now we're gonna take a quick break. And then we'll talk about kind of some of the other news that's happened in the median. So, you know, three ways to support the show: hit that subscribe button. We're still kind of figuring out our plans for this next season. I don't know if I'm going to be able to, like, if I might still be able to do the volume. I might be hosting more kind of live shows, post game shows. I think Josh and I may settle on something where we record a little more like regular schedule, but not as frequently. Like, he and I did roughly 80 of these last year. Like I don't think we're going to do that. We just can't do it anymore. We're too old. Sorry. We're figuring that out. So you support the show by subscribing. There's links if you would like to just literally send us money like weirdos, but we value that money. And then you can listen to the ads. So we will be right back after this break. Oh yeah. And if you want to check out, an app that I, a group that I am working with, Offside, there is a fun sports app, which is expanding into the NFL soon. And they already have NBA, WNBA, really fun data app along with like live video. It's really like, if you want to visualize data in new ways, like it's a great app to play around in. I have a really fun time with it. Okay. So other news. So don't even remember when this happened. But the Mavericks were part of a three-team trade in which they acquired former number one overall pick from the Atlanta Hawks, Zachary Risache. Lots of reporting around this one. Seemed like the Mavericks were kind of hot to trot on Reese Shea, which I find fascinating. They sent out, who did they send out? Our guy, former
Ryan Nimhard.
We no longer have to talk about Ryan Nimhard, which makes sense now. Now in hindsight, because he was shut down in Vegas after one game. That was clearly in the works. And they absorb, and they sent out, I think, a future second, which is fine. And then they absorbed our guy, Reese Shea, into the remains of the Anthony Davis trade exception. Well, let's go to you first. What do you think?
Again, I think it's fine by low opportunity. It is kind of funny that the Mavericks did not get Reese Shea trading Anthony Davis to the Hawks, which was like the really rumored deal. And we know, we know people that cover the Hawks, and from I think what we heard from those people was like it wasn't that close. Like they did not want to trade Reese Shea for Anthony Davis at the time. So the idea that the Mavericks traded Anthony Davis anyway and still kind of got Reese Shea in a way is just kind of funny how that works out. He's a tall shooter is probably the best thing you could say about him. He has no off-ball juice. He really stagnated in the last couple of years, and
we're only going into year three,
right. So the last 2 years, just he didn't. I don't know if you know the expectations for a number one overall pick are just higher than other young guys, and the Hawks coach Quinn Snyder just did not care for him as last season went on, and whether that's fair to him or not, who knows? Maybe he's in a better chance to develop. He seems like he just needs to keep getting more minutes. And Atlanta kind of got better as the year went on, and they became like a more serious playoff team. So I think Snyder probably, you know, when that happens, veteran coaches don't, you know, they get stingier with the rotation. They're not just going to throw away minutes to develop a guy if they feel like they can win games and make the playoffs. But he brings shooting. Like, he can shoot. So it's absolutely worth the flyer. Giving up Nimhard is really nothing. Nimhard is a great story, but you know, he's a 5'10 guard. It's just maybe even shorter than that. Just wasn't going to work long term here. And if the only negative potential to Reese Shea is you've got that player option that they kind of have to decide on, the team option, his rookie contract the last year. They kind of have to decide on it, I think, by the end of October, so they don't get to watch him for a full season before they decide. So if they decide to opt in, you know, in October and he doesn't play well, you know, that's kind of like a $17 million hole in your cap sheet, which again isn't that bad. And like 3 or 4 years ago, it wouldn't matter. But in the second apron world, like every penny counts now. Like if you have a $17 million black hole for next season with a guy that doesn't produce, then yeah, you look at it and you're like, well, what are you going to do with that money anyway? You're a rebuilding team. Like, it all matters. Like, every penny counts when you're trying to make deals in the second apron world. So they're going to have to make a decision soon. I don't, if I had to guess, I wouldn't think that they would opt into that deal, because it just feels really risky, and they'd maybe play it out and see what happens. But I like it from a sense of buy low, but I hope people don't have really exaggerated expectations because he's a former number one overall pick. He really struggled in those 2 years in Atlanta.
Well, so here's the thing. In terms of a bit of business, moving a former undrafted free agent and a second round pick for a former first rounder, let alone number one overall pick in a draft.
Right. Yeah.
It's just a fantastic piece of business. Now, if let's just for the sake of argument, remove that number one label and assume it's like a mid-round guy who hasn't gotten much burn or who hasn't played particularly well, what would the end result be? I still think this is a great bit of business. The $17 million hole is a bit of a problem, but if they opt not to pick that up, they can still come to terms with him at the end of the season for a long time. He'll
still have his bird rights, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Scott, CBA Mavs put out something on this, and you know, you'd think I'd be better prepared for this, and I'm not, to know exactly what the options are, but I'm okay with this one. The sort of sad thing about Reese Shea is that he's like a video game creative player who just hasn't improved anything. But he also wasn't horrible at anything. Like, you look at his raw numbers and like, he's gotten enough burn. He hasn't shown very much. That's the issue, where it's like, he's played a pretty good amount. He's like 140 games in two seasons. Maybe it's 130. It doesn't matter, but he's played more than like Lively, you know, for example.
Yeah.
So it's just that, to me, this is a top-notch gamble using the available assets. Obviously, this goes back to the previous segment where I'm bitching about wanting more of a guard, right? You know, I want a guard. He's not a guard. It's fine. We'll see what they can do with him. I did really find it interesting that Trae Young, who is now a member of the Washington Wizards, like, made a point to be like, good for this guy getting out of there, going somewhere else. You know, it just goes to show, you know, sometimes situation matters a ton for players.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And he's going to have opportunities to space the floor. Like, they're going to need him. Like, he's going to play. Like, good Lord. Like, if you look at how the roster is, they're going to need his floor spacing. And he was a good shooter. Like, his catch and shoot numbers are really good. I don't have them in front of me right now, but they're really good. The problem with him is just kind of everything else. He has no juice on the ball. He rebounds okay for his size. He's not an impact defender, but his catch and shoot numbers have been great for the last two seasons. I think he was nearing 40%. So put him on the floor next to Cooper and even like Najee, let those guys slash, attract attention. You could do some stuff with him. And it's, you know, why not?
Opportunity.
Yeah. So I want to look it up. I want to see what his, what were his catch and shoot numbers from three? Oh, that's the playoffs. That almost scared me because I saw 25% and I was like, excuse me, I don't think it was that bad. Yeah, he was 38% on catch and shoot threes last season. So that's good. He was now on pull ups, he was 29%. Like, again, you ask him to do anything other than catch and shoot, and you're probably not going to like what you see. But on this Mavericks team where they just need guys that can catch and shoot, I can see him having a role and hopefully, you know, doing some stuff for them.
Did we talk about, yes. And so suffice it to say, summary here, Kirk grumpy about Najee extension because Najee's going to be 29. I'm being ageist as shit, just to be fair. Kirk fine with Zachary Richesay. Najee's shown some stuff. Richesay hasn't. I'm being a bit of an asshole here.
I mean, so, one is 21 years old. Like, yes. I mean, that's got to be part of it for a team that is not, the Mavericks aren't going to be a title contender anytime soon. I would imagine that's not even trying to be negative or anything. Like, of course you're more excited for the new young guy that maybe has potential to do more.
Yeah.
We kind of know what Najee is. Like, I don't see Najee suddenly transforming his game or anything. Like, he kind of is who he is, which is a solid player. But Richesay, you know, it's like, what could this, you know, what if I pick this? What if it's, what is that joke? The gag, I can't remember what show it's from. Like, you can either pick the mystery box or the boat. And it's like, I'll pick the box, the mystery box, because it could, what if it's a boat or something like that?
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, I get it. I don't think you're being too ridiculous there.
Well, you never know with me. Sometimes I just don't know what to think about my own opinions. I usually love arguing with folks, and I just, part of why we haven't podcasted more, and this is just, you know, we're going to talk about a few other things in here, but it's just like, I think the Mavericks have done the best they could with the tools at hand, but I don't feel a lot of juice for the season. That's not to say I think it'll be bad. Once the basketball's played, I'm going to be like, yeah, okay, let's get into this. But I'm not feeling, like last year, we talked a lot about the Mavericks, and I did the thing I never wanted to do, which was hedge my own opinions and say, you know what, I think the Mavericks have a high floor. I should not have said it because I really didn't believe it, but I was so tired of being negative about the Mavericks for 6 months that I wanted them to be good. And then instead, 5 games into the season was over. So now we're looking at this season, and like, if anything, they have every reason to outperform their expectations. Like, their win total, we have it on the site somewhere and I can't find it, but their win total in Vegas is like, it's like 33, 34, something like that. And you know, I think that's the floor. I think they're going to win a lot. Like they're going, you know, there were 15 games where we would come in here post game last season and be like, man, one more bucket would have made the difference. And the difference in the team this year is Kyrie Irving on its face and a year two Cooper. They're just gonna be better. So it's like, you know, I don't know. This is going to be an interesting part of it's like the mid July-ness. Now we're in early August, and the fact that the last 3 weeks have been like Texas hell, where it's like I finish my day and I'm just like, I don't want to do anything. But let's talk about the last couple of pieces of news. You know, I don't even remember the last time we podcasted. It's been such a long time. When was this? Like, I'm gonna go see here when like our actual
podcast. I guess it was like right when you got back from Summer League.
Okay, Dallas Summer League reactions and more. When was that? Let's just see the exact date here. It says 2 weeks ago. That can't be right. It says like it's like when in the world? I'd love that I can't even figure out the dates of my own shows because that's not the way that the podcast ends up being streamed. Well, shoot, I can't figure this out. Bottom line, though, one of the pieces of news that was not in here was the Mavericks matched a New York Knicks offer from Musa Cisse. Why don't you talk about that a little bit? Musa was your guy in preseason last year.
Fucking love this guy. I think he's my favorite player in the league.
You mean that too.
I mean that. He is single-handedly keeping me from like just walking into an ocean and not talking to anyone ever again about this stuff. I love him. I wish every player played like him. My only thing that I got joy from watching last season was watching Musa run in transition after the Mavericks would get a defensive stop. That dude gets down the floor faster than almost anyone else. Like, he just books it. Plays hard. Obviously, he's a mess in terms of like foul trouble and still learning to play the game, but he just plays really fucking hard. And I think after the last couple of seasons and the way the NBA is trending, where it feels like guys just don't play hard, whether it's their fault or not, like sometimes guys can't play hard because they're falling apart. The schedule's a mess and travel's a mess. And sometimes they don't want to play hard because they just don't want to. Like, just to see a guy every minute he's on the floor, he's playing like he doesn't know if he's going to get back on the floor was just really refreshing. So I'm glad they brought him back. It seemed like a no-brainer. He really had some like, it's not just me kind of joking around in terms of loving him. Like, it feels like there's something there. Like, I would trade Daniel Gafford right now and let Musa be your backup center.
I mean, no, he's going to be like Derek Lively's not going to play this year. That's where I'm sitting right now. He's not running yet. It is August.
Okay. Then let Merez be your starting center and let Musa be your backup. Like, I'll roll with that. Who cares? Like, I don't know. I just,
no,
throw Musa, I want to see like, new and fun. That's kind of what I'm looking for.
Regular listener, Jamie Cardona says, I wish Musa didn't foul so much. So do we, but you know what? If you're going to get your money's worth, there's a guy who does just that.
His rim protection numbers are outrageous. And he had some legit games. Like, there was a game, like that game the Mavericks beat the Knicks by like 8 million points in like January or something. Like, I think he started that game, or he played really well in that game. And the Knicks were actually like, well, they weren't trying in that game. They were playing like dog crap, but they actually had their full roster for that game. So like, that was pretty legitimate. He's had moments and enough. And honestly, the Knicks are kind of on a heater with player acquisition. So like, if a team like the Knicks, which has been doing really well the last 2 to 3 years on acquiring talent and having an eye for talent, I don't think it's not a bad idea to be like, oh, we want the team that the current NBA champions want. Let's bring him back. Like, that seems like pretty sound strategy to me.
I think that's right. Yeah, you know, just good time to, like, if you're in on the Mavericks, like, I, like, you know, we're reaching the August doldrums result in the worst sports discussions in the calendar year. You can just see that, and I'm not going to address any one specific thing, but like, if you log on to the socials right now, there are two sports playing. There's the WNBA and baseball, and the second of which is like speed running towards a lockout next year. And so there's just, everyone's pissy. And so it's like, if you want to be happy and talk about the Mavericks, I really encourage it. I'm not really thinking about them a ton, despite running a Dallas Mavericks website. You think I would be better about this? But you know, if this has gone about as well as it could have, kind of a quiet off season. The off season isn't what it used to be. Like, cap room's just no longer a thing, and I don't think it'll ever be. You know, the Mavericks will be crafty in whatever moves they have to make. Like, they deserve the benefit of the doubt for as long as we can give it to them. You know, everything's just it's mostly fine. It's not particularly thrilling. And I'll get there, I think, once the games are actually being played. You know, you watch, like, the last summer league game was just an abomination before God, and it's like, we can't. Yeah, you watch that first one, you're so happy to see basketball again, and then by like game five, it's like, nope, don't want this anymore. Well, do you have any other thoughts?
No, not really. I think we hit everything that we hit.
Well, we talked about our movie watching before the show, so we don't need to rehash it. But suffice it to say, Josh and I would like you to go see Spider-Man and go see The Odyssey. Yep. Really something.
It was crazy.
You saw a 70 millimeter Odyssey, right?
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, if you're listening to this, you can't go. I mean, the tickets are gone. So
they did extend the run, though.
I think those are sold out too.
Yeah, they are too, but it's pretty impressive, you know.
Yeah, if you can find them, you know, obviously go. It's incredible, not once in a lifetime, but it's a truly unique experience, and
lots it's of just good cool discussion around it too. Like, there's a lot of film and story and it just gets gross, just like sports conversations. But I found all the reading I've done about the Odyssey from different people. Like, Christopher Nolan was interviewed by this Chinese academic about the movie, and she flat out asks him, like, you know, the Greeks didn't have a concept of atonement, yet the second half of your movie is largely about atonement. Can you walk us through how you got to that point? And it's like, a lot of the writing before that had been like, why did Nolan did this? He's stupid. And instead, like, there's a conversation, and it's like, Nolan explains his point of view. And it was really good. And like, there's lots of good writing about that, about this movie. And you sometimes like in America, you see a lot of shitty, just like takes instead of analysis. And I really love that about this movie.
Yeah, no, it's fun. I mean, it makes sense, because it's like the story. Mm-hmm. So, like, I guess a movie about one of the first like actual stories. That makes sense that there's a lot of good discussion around it. But I think what was really cool yesterday when we saw Spider-Man, actually saw it twice this weekend, funny enough. Saw it with friends, made sure it was okay to take my daughter, and then took my daughter yesterday.
It's going to IMAX.
It was. I think the craziest thing was, it was the first time in a while outside of like Nolan 70 millimeter movies where I could not find tickets. Like, every showing in a movie theater within like 15 miles of me was sold out, besides like the very front row for Spider-Man. And I luckily found one, because, you know, once you tell a 5-year-old that you're going to do something, sorry, tickets are sold out.
I saw it at 8:30 in the morning on Friday. Yeah.
But it was crazy. And then we went to the theater, like, the concession line was so long. The fountain machines ran out of soda. There was no soda left in the fountain machines. And, like, you know, as people that love going to theaters, it was incredible to see how full they were. The people love Spider-Man.
It was something like a $430 million weekend at the American box office. That's how many movies people were seeing. It's like Toy Story crazy. Cranked out another 40 million.
Toy Story, Christopher Nolan, Spider-Man.
You know what? You know what? I'm going to be talking about this at length. My wedding anniversary is on the weekend of the 40th anniversary and one day re-release of Transformers, the animated feature. And I am like, that movie lives in my head. It's like the first movie I really remember seeing. I was like 5, even though it came out in 86. I was born in 84, but I remember seeing the VHS. And like, I'm going to have to go see it. Like, going to the movies is back, guys. It's never been gone, but it was hard to go for a while. The theaters have improved. Yeah. It is expensive. Damn it. It's a good time. And I recommend it.
If you don't get snacks, I think you can make it. But I like getting snacks. Like, that's part of the fantastic.
Oh my God. Yeah. AMC has a, remember when I told you about that popcorn bucket deal, and you're like, Kirk, that's too much money. I paid $25 for a popcorn bucket deal where it's like you get half price popcorn every time you go, and I've gotten half price popcorn every time.
There you go.
It's really there. Good. I don't know anything. I can't really think of anything else. Like all the it's you know, I will like you haven't started Andor, much to my chagrin. We're just gonna do that.
No,
we got other stuff to do. We're playing our video games and having fun there. Okay, so I don't know when we'll record again. Like this is, you know, the news breaking element of this. Like August is going to be kind of a tough month, and I don't feel the need to force content right now. It's just too hot, and I have between the 2 year old and the two ginormous fucking puppies. If you want to follow me on Instagram and see photos of me just exasperated with these dogs, I recommend it. But you know, we'll be back at some point. There'll be regular scheduled content that we start kind of flipping through. And we'll kind of take it from there. You got anything else?
No, I'm good.
This has been Kirk Henderson and Josh Bowe of Pod Maverick. Thank you so much for your time. Everybody be good and go Mavs.